Good morning and welcome to another episode. Welcome. Music is like poetry, and it has a message. And history is like a diamond that shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can all comprehend, like definition. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now pull back the curtain and see the contribution, and you will find our quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, vibrations. And so again, I thank you for joining us this morning, so that you will have an opportunity to hear a different perspective from our diaspora. Without any further ado, I would like to invite our student host, Walter Pierce. Okay, so we're going to keep it moving. Since Walter's not on the line just at this moment, we're going to go with Mr. Shelton Harris. Good morning, Mr. Harris.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, for your chains of events, there's a song that you'll be playing?
Yes. It's called When the 90s Came. But let me just step back for a second and find out what we're really talking about when we're talking about chains of events. When we're talking about chains of events, we're talking about We're talking about the different ways that we see ourselves through news as it affects our community from the Alloys of Newark. It's really a report on the politics, education, business, religion, and science. Change of events reveal the interpretation of one event and how it relates to another so that the listener will know, you know, what's happening. Today, our change of events comes from the West Coast answer to the Last Poets. They're called the Watts Prophets. And then they didn't get the same kind of recognition that their contributions to black consciousness and laying the foundation for rap as the Last Poets did. You know, the group was formed at the Watts Writers Workshop, an organization started by the screenwriter Bud Schulberg, designed to provide a creative outlet in the wake of the 1965 Watts riots. Its members have created a vehicle for the continuance of black culture through spoken word. Today we'll be blessed with a song from the brothers after they looked for better things in the future and wind up seeing the same or not worse. The song was called When the 90s Came. if we can move on to this.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Harris, we're going to come right back to you, but right now we're going to slide it over to our student host, Walter Pierce. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio. And to start off the show for today, I want to start off with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. And today's diamond, for me, is a guy whose case has been known worldwide, actually, and all around the country, specifically North America. And this case happened sometime around the 1800s, and this case has really led to a lot of change in our society. And it is more of a pioneering case that led to amendments and that led to different laws being put into place. So without further ado, today's diamond is Dred Scott. Dred Scott was born into slavery sometime in 1795. He made history by launching a legal battle to gain his freedom. After his first owner died, Scott spent time in two free states working for several subsequent owners. Shortly after he married, he tried to buy freedom for himself and his family, but failed. So he took his case to the Missouri courts, where he won only to have the decision overturned at the Supreme Court level. Now, see, Scott was born sometime on the turn of the century, often fixed at 1795, in Southampton County, Virginia. Legend has it that his name was Sam, but when his elder brother died, he adopted his name instead. His parents were slaves, but it is uncertain whether the Blow family owned them at birth or thereafter. Peter Blow, his family relocated first to Huntsville, Alabama, and then to St. Louis, Missouri. After Peter Blow's death in the early 1930s, Scott was sold to the U.S. Army doctor, John Emerson. In 1836, Scott fell in love with the slave of another Army doctor, 19-year-old Harriet Robinson, and her ownership was transferred over to Dr. Emerson when they were wed. In the ensuing years, Dr. Emerson traveled to Illinois and the Wisconsin territories, both of which prohibited slavery. When Emerson died in 1846, Scott tried to buy freedom for himself and his family from Emerson's widow, but she refused. Scott made history by launching a legal battle to gain his freedom. That he had lived with Dr. Emerson in free territories to become the basis for his case. The process began in 1846. Scott lost his initial suit in a local St. Louis district court, but he won in a second trial, only to have that decision overturned by the Missouri State Supreme Court. With support from local abolitionists, Scott filed another suit in federal court in 1854 against John Sanford, the widow, Emerson's brother, and executor of his estate. When that case was decided in favor of Sanford, Scott turned to the U.S. Supreme Court. In December of 1856, Abraham Lincoln delivered a speech foreshadowing the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. Examining the constitutional implications of Dred Scott case. And on March 6, 1857, the Supreme Court decision in Dred Scott versus Sanford was issued, 11 long years after the initial suits. 7 of the 9 judges agreed with the outcome delivered by Chief Justice Roger Taney, who announced that slaves were not citizens of the United States and therefore have no right to sue in federal courts. The decision also declared that the Missouri Compromise allowed Scott to sample freedom in Illinois and Wisconsin was unconstitutional and that Congress did not have the authority to prohibit slavery. The Dred Scott decision sparked outrage in the northern states and glee in the south. The growlings of civil war inevitable made civil war inevitable. Too controversial to retain the Scots as slaves after the trial, Mrs. Emerson remarried and returned Dred Scott and his family to the Belows, who granted them freedom in May of 1857. That same month, Frederick Douglass delivered a speech discussing the Dred Scott decision on the anniversary of the American Abolition Society. Eventually, the 13th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution overruled the Supreme Court ruling. And of course, later on, he will end up moving back over to St. Louis, where he died a little bit after. But thanks, everybody, for listening to my piece. And again, shout out to biography.com for providing this article. And, you know, the reason I wanted to really talk about this and the importance of this is because this is a piece. I mean, Dred Scott, of course, his case is something that a lot of people really should start to know and understand. You know, I believe that not that many people of today's generation probably know about the Dred Scott case. But his case is always important to go back and look on. Again, just to summarize, he was first owned by a family, the Blow family they called them, and they ended up selling him and his wife to another slave owner named John Emerson. And after John Emerson died, Dred Scott wanted to try to buy his freedom out since he lived in a free state. Since he wanted to show proof of that. And this will end up going to the courts and people in the Supreme Court ended up denying his ruling because he was a slave and he could not defend himself, which is a terrible thing to think about because he had to represent himself and, you know, he had a legitimate case. He was in free states. You know, but even though his case was declined, this sparked an outrage in the northern states. You know, abolitionists started to get involved, helping them. People like Frederick Douglass spoke up. You know, and even when he returned back to his Emerson's widow, Emerson's widow wanted to return him back to the Blow family because it was just too much for her to handle. You know, and he ended up actually getting his freedom. And then, of course, later on, slavery would actually be abolished. So, you know, just this case in general is just such an iconic case in our society, which led to a lot of other change, also including, again, the 13th and 14th Amendment. It led to a lot of different changes in America at that time, temporarily. And then, of course, you know, it didn't lead to permanent change, though. But it was the start of something new, which is always something that is a positive thing to happen. It started something new, but it wasn't changing our society. I don't want people to mix that up. But it was the start of something, and it was a case that was pioneering to many others and many other people getting inspired by this. So thank you for listening.
Okay. We're going to transition into a song, Cancel Culture by
Cancel culture, can we cancel it? yo, you ain't been fun. Wanna hide straight 221. But really, I fear COVID gon' still be here. Top sign still up in my rear. Baby mama got the news, now she all on her knees. Cause I didn't stop when they said freeze. I must admit, I thought this year be a blast. Every night I will be raising the glass. On tour straight, making a stash. But instead, I'm watching this race to sass. Little kid raising rifle to blast. Killed two people and the cops let them pass. It wasn't that kind of to me. That wasn't even this year. Yeah, the past year's been whack. Hunting season on everything black. Speaking of black, just lost black hands in the can. Somebody please take 20 back.
Okay.
We're back with Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, I just need to tell you, we live in a new world, a world of processing, downloading, and waiting. And sometimes, just so the audience, and I'm sure they know it too, it just doesn't come out right. And so that being said, I would like for you to please continue. I know you have another segment or you want to finish off. But basically, so the audience and everybody knows, there's a song that was supposed to be played that is still processing.
not a problem. If you can find some room later on to stick it in, it's all good.
But absolutely.
But today, excuse me, Curtains, as we see it, is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and the stage. Many recording artists and artists of other kinds, and their companies have grown rich with the support of the community. And what benefits the community have they gotten from these artists? So today we're going to pull the curtain back on a brother who epitomizes the phrase Renaissance man. The success of whatever he did, he was very successful, and his name is Gordon Parks. His full government name is Gordon Roger Alexander Buchanan Parks. He was born on November 30th, 1912, in Fort Scott, Kansas. He was an author, photographer, film director, who documented the African-American life. The son of sharecroppers, Parks grew up in poverty. After dropping out in high school, he led to a series of odd jobs, which included pianist and waiter. It wasn't until 1938 that he bought his first camera, and initially made a name for himself as a photographer and fashion photographer. After moving to Chicago, he began chronicling the city's impoverished South Side. These photographs led to a Julius Rosenwald Fellowship, and in 1942 became the photographer for the Farm Security Administration. While with that organization, he took perhaps the best-known photograph called American Gothic, which featured an African-American woman standing holding a mop and a broom in front of the American flag. In 1948, he became a staff photographer for Life magazine, and it was the first black person to hold that position. He remained with the magazine until the early 70s and became known for his portrayals of ghetto life, black nationalists, and the civil rights movement. He was also noted for his intimate photographs of public figures like Barbara Streisand and Muhammad Ali. But as a writer, Park's first work was a work of fiction called The Learning Tree, a coming-of-age novel about black adolescents in Kansas in the 20s. He also wrote forthright autobiographies called The Choice of Weapons, one of my personal favorites, and other books including Born Black, Shannon, and Arias in Silence. In 1968, he became the first brother to direct a major motion picture film adaptation of his book, The Learning Tree. He produced the movie, wrote the screenplay, and the musical score. He next directed Shaft in 1971, a major success, and helped give rise to the genre of what most black people call blaxploitation by the media. But it was a way for a lot of African Americans to be able to get into films. He directed the sequel, Shaft's Big Score. He directed a couple comedies, Super Cops. He did a drama about the singer Leadbelly in 1976. He was the kind of person that reached out to those coming up and needed a helping hand. The Gordon Parks Foundation fellowships are awarded annually to two photographers, artists, filmmakers, and musicians to support the development of new ongoing projects that explore themes of representation and social justice in historical dialogue with Parks' creative work and vision. For over a decade, the Parks Foundation has collaborated with 10 leading educational institutions across the country to confer scholarships and prizes totaling more than 100 students pursuing disciplines as photography, the visual arts, film, journalism, art history, African and African American studies. And that represent everything that he tried to do and convey during his life. Current partnerships include Columbia Graduate School of Journalism, the NYU Tisch School of Arts and Fashion Institute of Technology, the Ghetto Film School, Harvard University, National Young Arts Foundation, the Pratt Institute, and Purchase College. A true Renaissance man in every aspect of the word and should be recognized as such. Gordon Parks, another man of our times.
Okay, good job. I want to bring in Tanisha. Tanisha, from what you've heard so far, how's the show going?
It's going great. It's really making you think. It's sad, the type of world that we live in. Everybody's talking about 2020 has nothing compared to what our ancestors been through. Yeah, basically that's what I want to say right now. It's really deep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for adding a little cohesion and a bit of perspective to what we're living through right now. We're going to come back to you later on, and right now we turn it back over to our student host, Walter Pierce. Walter.
Yes, thank you. And to continue with my second diamond of today, you know, this woman is somebody you could also consider a pioneer as well. Somebody who, if you want to get into politics, you could look up to her. She has had many accomplishments over her career, and I believe she is a great person to talk about today. And her name is Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice was born on November 14, 1954, in Birmingham, Alabama, the only child to a Presbyterian minister and a teacher. Rice grew up surrounded by racism in the segregated South. She earned her bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Denver in 1974, her master's from the University of Notre Dame in 1975, and her PhD from the University of Denver's Graduate School of International Studies in 1981. That same year, she joined Stanford University as a political science professor. In 1993, Rice became the first woman and first African American to serve as provost of Stanford University, a post she held for 6 years. During that time, she also served as the university's chief budget and academic officer. In the mid-1980s, Rice spent a period in Washington, D.C., working as an international affairs fellow attached to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In 1989, she became director of the Soviet and East European Affairs with the National Security Council and special assistant to President George H.W. Bush during the dissolution of the Soviet Union and German reunification. In 1997, she served on the Federal Advisory Committee on Gender Integrated Training in the Military. A few years later, in 2001, Rice was appointed to National Security Advisor by President George W. Bush, becoming the first African-American woman to hold the post. She went on to become the first African-American woman to serve as U.S. Secretary of State. She became the nation's 66th Secretary of State in 2004, following Colin Powell's resignation, and served from 2005 to 2009. As Secretary of State, Rice dedicated her department to transformational diplomacy with the mission of building upstanding democratic, well-governed states around the world and the Middle East in particular. To that end, she relocated American diplomats such as hardship locations as Iraq, Afghanistan, and Mongolia, and required them to become fluent in two languages. She also created a high-level position to defragment U.S. foreign aid. And that concludes my segment on Condoleezza Rice. You know, Condoleezza Rice, she had many accomplishments throughout her career, including, you know, going back to Stanford days where she held a big position at Stanford, and which allowed her to move on and go on to Washington, D.C., where she really succeeded and really got her accolades with U.S. foreign exchanges, just trying to bring the world to peace or make the relations better, you know. So she had, of course, many accomplishments, and somebody who wants to get into politics, especially if you're a woman, should look up to somebody like Condoleezza Rice, who has already done it, you know. But to go in even deeper, you know, another reason I wanted to talk about her is because of, I believe, her political standing, you know. Me and Mr. Bay earlier this week was talking about this, and, you know, in 2012, she supported the Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan campaign against President Obama, and that caused a lot of disconnect and hate towards her from other people of the Democratic side. I believe she was a Democrat as well, and she went over to the Republican and supported Mitt Romney, you know. But you know, we were talking, we just believe that people really take politics too personal. And what we mean by that is, you know, just because somebody supports a certain political side, that some person might really take it personal and act like they can't talk to them, they can't have a conversation, and they just have to remove themselves from them. And the problem with that is that causes a lot of separation and disconnect in our society, which is already a lot of separation. So even with this, you not wanting to confront or talk to somebody who might have a different political view of you, of yours, you shouldn't always just try to avoid them or just try to hate them. you should first try to, like, hear them out and ask, try to have the actual conversation about it. And just ask them why. If you so concerned about it, just ask them, like, why would you do this? And the answer might even surprise you, you know. But, like, that is just one of the biggest problems I just really wanted to talk about. It's just the separation, the taking politics too personal. Because at the end of the day, we're all people, and we shouldn't take it too personal. We should actually start just the more come together and, you know, try to put politics aside as much as possible unless we have to. Unless it's actually coming down to laws being put into place, then we could have discussions on how to make this better. But you shouldn't. The main thing about a person or the personality of a person shouldn't really be about what your political standing is, political party of choice is, because that just makes it a whole lot more. That just makes a whole lot more division and separation in our society. So, I thank everybody for listening. And also, shout out to biography.com again for this piece as well. Go ahead.
Okay. And we're going to go. Mr. Harris, do you have a question or a comment?
Well, sounds like a little of both. Like, first, Condoleezza Rice, this is like more like a comment or an addendum to what he was saying. She grew up in the same neighborhood as Angela Davis did. And she was aware of the four little girls that got killed in that church in Alabama. She was part of that same community. So she understood that there's a definite problem in this country as far as division, like Walter was saying. But I was wondering sometimes if we don't understand as a people, or Walter, how do you feel about the right wing and the left wing and that not being part of the same bird? You think that there's some kind of connection between both of them leading toward the division? Go ahead, excuse me.
Yeah, you know that question. That's a good question. Like, I believe there's connection between the two. Of course, they're always going to have some type of agreement. I believe, you know, socially probably, I believe some right wing and left wing people actually have the same opinion and understand. You know, if something traumatic happens in our society, if somebody is wrongfully killed, I believe there could be some connection. But in the most part, I believe it's just a lot of separation. We always try to find a way just to disagree, even at the simplest things, you know. But, like, as you mentioned, the four little girls, like, something, like, as bad as that and traumatic as that, I believe that they're with some Republicans, some right wing to some left wing, I believe they will come to agreements that this is something that is bad, something that is very traumatic at the end of the day. But in my opinion, the most part, it's really not a lot of connection, what I see. It's just everything, they have to disagree. It has to be a debate. If it's not a debate, then it just has to be. They always have to find a way to disagree and prove that their point is better than the others. And that's exactly what keeps causing division. If we just keep doing that, then nobody is going to be satisfied. It's just always going to have to be that I just have to always be right at the end of the day. That's really what it is.
Okay, so as I interject in here, it seems that nobody really understands what a settlement is until it has to do with money. And so that being said, a settlement is when both sides don't get everything that they want, but they get a little something, both parties. And that's how we come to an agreement. And when we talk about politics and separation and division, this is something that presently we've kind of like gotten away from. And it is okay to agree to disagree in our society. Unless we're all being cloned to think and live and have the same experiences as one another, you know, and even though you might live in the same neighborhood, depending on the household that you're raised in, determines your output for an adulthood. And so you know, there are going to always be people who dare to be different, who dare to blaze a different path in their lives, different from any and everybody else. And when I think of Condoleezza Rice, I am referring to her. And so that being said, we're going to open up the line. We have 0007, almost like 007, but it's an extra zero. Okay. So please introduce yourself, and do you have a question or a comment?
Okay.
Now, sometimes when you're on the line, Chris, are you there?
What happens is waiting to be called upon takes a little bit longer than what you anticipate when you first call in. And so that being said, we're going to have Tanisha come right on in and bring us a little cohesion.
When you think about politics, especially the difference between the Democrats and Republicans, it's all the same at the end of the day. Because what have they really have done for America for the sense of all citizens? You know, I guess you always have to remember history. History always repeats itself, and what empire that is in power. So when we think about the United States as an empire, not much as a government, what have they done to the Native Indians? What have they done to the African Americans or any other immigrants that have come to America? So at the end of the day, all the laws that they passed were not for us. Like, for instance, when you look at redlining, you know, why would you create laws that will truly hurt a particular race? And I think that's something that we have to delve into and understand. So at the end of the day, it's like it's not so much power from the government, it's the people who coming together. And what I see the connection between, like, the Watts riots and also the 1967 riots that happened in the city of Newark, it's just like, wow, it's the same type of rhetoric and the same problems that we continually to face. And it's like, how do we move forward, you know, and show the next generations how to be prosperous and how to create their own change, or, you know, try to create their own utopia in a world that's full of confusion. So I guess it goes back to the point is of negative and positive energy, which rules this world. So I guess we have to remember all the good people have to fight, and we have to continue to fight and continue, not even fight. When I say fight means that you understand who you are, you know what your gifts are, you know what your weaknesses are, and you work on it, and you come as a collective to be able to benefit mankind as a whole. And we have to be able to come together as a nation and as a world, because if you think about it, that Condoleezza Rice and Dred Scott and all our other ancestors, they always traveled to Europe or they traveled to Africa. So it was always that connection around the world. And that's what we have to remember, is it's like, how do we help each other in a sense to be able to create a change that we want and a change that we seek?
Okay, so I just want to respond to something that you said. History repeats itself when we fail to learn the lessons that it teaches us. And it seems that we have a reoccurring lesson that still needs to be learned here in America. Mr. Harris, with me saying that, I would like for you to respond.
Well, a lot of the same tensions and things that, like we said, the misunderstandings of one group to another, the kind of stuff that we're going through now is the same kind of stuff that our country went through in 1860, prior to the Civil War, where one group was just so adamant that their part was right, and then we're not going to let anybody else tell us anything different. And if you don't stop doing what you're doing, we'll just secede from the whole country. The state of Texas has put in an application to secede from the government just this month. There are new places called New California that are acting like they're part of the new California that has nothing to do with liberal California, and they want to secede from the United States. There's a new Nevada. There's a couple militant and, like, reactionary people that are doing stuff, just like the president. They had the attorney general in Texas, and attorney general from 17 other states went to the Supreme Court to try to overturn the election. You know, and it was smacked down.
Okay, thank you. And I don't even want to give too much airtime to delusional ideas that, in my viewpoint, don't deserve that much attention.
Right. You know, I was just trying to connect the two mindsets from 150 years apart. You still have people thinking the same way. But you're right. It doesn't really call for a conversation.
Yeah, I think we need to take all. But it's so funny. But I think we need to take all this in context. We have to look at everything in a holistically way. And I guess from this conversation is you're always going to have someone as an adversary that's going to always be against you. So as a people, how do we protect ourselves mentally, spiritually, and physically that we be able to get out of this rut that we in and become the kings and queens that we once were? And it's like, how come, how do we move forward to make sure that we do have a legacy of generational wealth when we in a systematic strength that opposes against us when it comes financially? And it's like, how can we move forward? And that's something to really think about, especially with this pandemic that's going on. A lot of people are facing evictions. A lot of people are going to lose their properties. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people have lost their businesses. So as a whole, how do we figure out the ways to move in a way when a system is created to partially defranchise us? And I think those are the conversations that we need to have and really think about, because it's not going to always be about the pen. It's going to be about both sometimes. And I think we really need to delve into that and know what we're fighting against to know how to fight. Because every problem has a solution. So it's like, how do we find these solutions to these problems?
Yeah, well, the beginning starts with sitting down and listening to your adversary and learning.
Walter,
I want to turn it back to you. Being the youngest person in the house, what is your viewpoint? Do you have a question or a comment to contribute to this morning's conversation, which I have to add you brought to the table?
Yes, I did. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think really this division is really showing in really today's world and generation. Especially in the situation we're in, you know, a lot of people just all over social media and in the world just love to bring up their political standing and political party and what they represent, like it's a personality trait. And I just, you know, I see this and I used to fall into that trap a little bit. But once I started to actually understand that this is, you know, this is not something that somebody should just be all about. Because just doing this, all it does is just cause more division, as you can see. So I believe people just really see things and not always try to debate and have actually conversation and talk about social change in particular, and not include all this excrement you just say sometimes that is just not needed. I believe it will just go better and more peaceful world, in my opinion. That's really what I have to say about it.
Okay. Let's see. Chris, are you on the line now, and have you been listening?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm absolutely.
Are you now? Please introduce yourself.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher Lynch. I used to be a student host more than a decade ago. But it's good to hear everybody and everybody's perspective on the topic this morning.
Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I'm really just taking it all in. It's good that, you know, hearing these topics back when I was in high school is always enlightening to get more in-depth about the things that I already know and these details that everybody's hitting on. And like the lady just spoke about, and she just hit on some hard key points, because we do need to come to an understanding about the system that we have at our disposal right now. Is not in favor for us in any way, form, or fashion. And it starts with the understanding and the recognition, you know, the awareness. And this is what this platform that you all have is. It's the awareness factor. And the more aware we become, the more change we can bring about.
Okay. Thank you for your contribution.
Right.
And welcome back this morning. Mr. Harris, I'm going to ask you to kind of put this together here.
Yeah, well, kind of. Well, what we're talking about is that there's a cyclical nature to history, and as you had said prior, that if you don't understand the lessons that history has taught you, we're going to be forced to repeat them over and over again. It was the same thing with Dred Scott. Dred Scott thought that he was a free man in a country that said he was free, until he went to the courts, and the court said, nah, not really, brother. But it led to other legislation that helped people that came after him. Condoleezza Rice was the same way. You know, even though we might not have agreed with her political stance as far as being a Republican and working under the Bush, you know, regime, she still was a pioneer and a leader in a lot of areas for sisters that have done a lot of stuff for this country. And, you know, and the Gordon Parks little issue, you know, he was talking about how things, once you see what they are, you can get to look at things differently, because people are so locked into their own little tribe that they don't want to look outside of that area. And, you know, and that's what the whole Watch Prophets thing was talking about how surprised they were when the 90s came, because in the 60s and 70s, they were looking for a completely different world. If we'd have stuck together and stayed with the plan then, and they were kind of surprised when the 90s came. So all of these things are connected in a way that we need to keep open the dialogue to all the stuff that's going on. And again, we need to start talking to each other, even if we don't agree. We need to agree to disagree, but still listen to the other person's side of what's going on.
Okay. Now, your song is still processing, you know, our technological advancements have gone very far. But, you know, there's nothing like being in the studio where you're able to just hit the button. And so that being said, I have one person who has not come on yet and has been on the line for the entirety. Do you have a number one fan? Do you have a question or comment to add to today's program?
Yes, another great show, and Gordon Parks was another great person in our history that I was able to meet in my lifetime, in his lifetime. Shortly before he passed, he came to the Newark Museum and did a presentation. But and I do agree with Walter with regards to Condoleezza Rice. She is a trailblazer in our community. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So now I'm going to play another tune. Boomerang, one of my favorite tunes, as Mr. Harris always said. We'll be right back just before we wrap this show. You're tuned to Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of Peace Hall in South Orange. We are Quest Community Vibrations.
Oh,
So now, with this last few 90 seconds left, Chris, do you have any last words for joining us here this morning?
Well, okay. I appreciate y'all for having us on, having me on. It was always great listening, and the station is amazing. It's informative at all times, and the music is phenomenal.
Thank you very much. And, well, Walter, I'll come right back to you. Tanisha, last words.
Know thyself. Seek within and find what you can do to create change. Or whatever you pray to it for strength and empowerment.
Okay. Mr. Harris.
Just look into yourself and find your direction and then follow it.
Okay. How about our number one fan?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for this wonderful show to help enhance our youth knowledge.
Okay, there we go. All right, and Walter, please close us out.
Yes, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. You know, we're on here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. So make sure you come on at 10 a.m. to the show so you can listen live, and you could probably have a word in if you have something to say. But besides that, Quest Youth Radio is the best
youth radio.
All right, and Chris was a former student on the show, and thank you everyone for tuning in to Quest Community Vibrations. Great job, everyone, and thank you very much. We air every Saturday morning from Seton Hall University from 7 to 8 a.m. Peace.